Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So my co-host Tim Swartz and I welcome Ray Shemansky to the Paracast. And he's going to tell us about what may be the goings-on at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, that legendary place that maybe we first heard about back in the early days of the UFO field, and of course, Major Donald Keough and people like that. Or the possible connections with Roswell, Hangar 18. Who knows? Ray, before we get started deep into this show, tell us something about your background. How does one become a worker at Wright-Patterson?
I was at the University of Detroit, and I was studying electrical and electronics engineering. I got a bachelor's of science in electrical and electronics engineering, so it's a five-year degree. So they had a cooperative education agreement with the University of Detroit, and Detroit was a mechanical town. You know, it was the automotive industry world headquarters, and they really weren't into computers yet, so double E's, that's electrical, electronics engineering folks, basically had to leave the city after they got their degree because the automotive industry wasn't really doing much at the time. So Wright-Patterson Air Force Base had this agreement with the University of Detroit. You know, we had a small class. I think we probably graduated in 1975. We probably graduated about 20 double E's out of the engineering class. And so they were quite interested in us. And the counselor for the university said, hey, there's this great opportunity to do this work study at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. It's about a 3.5-hour drive. It'd be really good for you. And then they explained what the program was going to do. So four of us went down and took jobs as students in a work study program at Wright-Patterson. And that was in January of 1973. And that's how I came to be introduced to the Air Force and to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Now, with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, before we get to the legends, what kind of assignments did you have early on?
Well, when you're a co-op student, you know, you're just trying not to trip and fall on your own sword. Interestingly enough, it was my very first assignment. What they like to do is pair up a student with somebody who's like mid-level in whatever that field is. And so I got paired up with a mid-level engineer, though he was a mechanical engineer. You know, he's there to show you the ropes and, you know, kind of tour you around, introduce you to people, get you acclimated and oriented to your environment. So it's like the first week, maybe the second week. And my guy, his name was Al, that's his real first name. He said, hey, let's go to the cafeteria, and I'm going to get you a candy bar. So I said, well, it's cool, you know, kind of a welcoming gift. And the building we were in was basically three buildings connected, a two-story that would be on the east end, a two-story office building, then about a 250-foot airplane hangar, a real live Air Force airplane hangar, and then the other side, another two-story business office. And so we step out of the one side on the east end, and we're going to walk west through this dark hangar. And as we step into this hangar, he says to me, have you heard about our aliens? I'm a co-op student from the University of Detroit. I have no idea what he's talking about. And so in my very first week at Wright-Patt, my mentor, the guy assigned to me to show me the ropes, as we step into this empty, dark airplane hangar, says to me, have you heard about our aliens? And that was my introduction to everything Wright-Patterson, aliens, and extraterrestrial.
All right, but that is real strange. You're a total stranger introduced to somebody who will blurt out, have you heard about aliens? Do you think at that point maybe he was just kind of play games with you because Wright-Patt had the reputation of having some association with UFO investigations?
Right at that moment, I didn't know what to make of it, but, you know, we went, we got the candy bar, we walked back through the hangar, got back to our office, and then I took it upon myself to intercept some of the people that I knew that Al hung out with, you know, like Doug from accounting and that sort of thing, and wanted to find out more about Al and who he was, and, you know, was he a jokester? But the people that I talked to, what they soon revealed to me is that pretty much the entire base population was cognizant about the fact that Wright-Patterson had been home to Project Blue Book for 17 years all the way up until 1969. And I arrived there in 73, so that's only 4 years later. Well, really, 3 years later, because they closed in January of 1970. So 3 years later, it's still fresh in everybody's mind. And we had Project Blue Book here. They had heard and read about the connection between White Pat, Roswell, Project Blue Book. So there was this very general, widespread knowledge about Wright-Patterson and its history to ufology. So Al was just basically saying, by the way, you know, let me be the first to tell you that I'm sure you're going to hear this a lot from a lot of other people, because it was still the buzz. He told me, and all the folks that I talked to eventually backed it up and said, oh, yeah, a Blue Book was here, and, you know, read the newspapers. And so there was a lot of publicity, and it just kind of became ingrained in the population.
Right, but I'm sure that based on any normal security regulations, they would limit their conversation to things that were already publicly known, wouldn't they?
Well, the office that I was working in would have been the very last people on the base to have worked those projects. And, you know, the materials that were brought there from Roswell, and we know they were brought there because the folks who handled it signed affidavits that said it was brought to Roswell. We know the materials were brought here, and that stuff was slammed under a lid, and only a handful of people, I'm sure, ever really knew about it. So everybody else was getting their feed from the radio, television, or, you know, a local newspaper. They certainly wouldn't have the ability to reveal anything because they didn't know anything.
But when it comes to Roswell, when we're dealing with the mid-70s, Roswell was not an issue in the UFO field. It wasn't until the late 70s when Stanton Friedman started talking to people who had some involvement in Roswell. And the book, of course, that was written by William Moore and Charles Berlitz came out with participation from Friedman. Up until then, except for the real early days for the original story, Roswell was not an issue. So how did it come up there?
Well, actually, Roswell did not come up. If you read my first book, Alien Shades of Grays, formerly called 50 Shades of Grays, Evidence of Extraterrestrial Visitation to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and Beyond, I actually retell the story of that first encounter with Al walking through the hangar. And Al doesn't mention Roswell. What Al says to me is that he was aware that there was a crash out west, and the occupants and their machines were brought to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So that is the method in which it was told to me. And if you'll permit me, I had never wanted to write a book, especially about aliens and UFOs, but eventually I had just doing my own personal research, collected enough information I thought should be passed on. So I actually tracked Al down, and I wrote to him my recollection of our first discussion. And, you know, it was on typed paper, and said, now, Al, if you don't remember this, I'm not going to put it in a book, but I'm going to give you a chance to think about it. And whatever you tell me you recall, that's what I will write. And so he put a few notations on the piece of paper. You know, it was like maybe three type pages. Put it in an envelope, sent it back to me, and he didn't really change anything except he said, I can neither confirm nor deny aliens at Wright-Pat or something to that effect. So, you know, it's a story I try to recall decades later. It's one that he verified to me in writing, and again, it really never mentions Roswell. It only mentions, you know, a crashed craft and its occupants.
We have Ray Shemansky. We're talking about Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. where he says he worked for a number of years. More to come with Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Hey, trader, listen up. The markets have changed. Have you changed your trading strategies? Vantage Point can help you conquer volatility. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word money to 813-813 and discover how to predict stock market trends 1 to 3 days in advance with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. No matter which way the market moves, Vantage Point's patented AI can give you a massive edge. Text money to 813-813 to get what you need to stay ahead of markets and find your best entries and exits. Text the word money to 813-813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting, you agree to the terms available at vantagepointsoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and texts using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of Vantage Point. Your consent is not a condition to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text money to 813-813.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I'm going to ask you a question here, kind of a devil's advocate question, but you understand in the UFO field, we've had a whole lot of people who claim to have affiliations that did not exist, like Phil Imbrogno, who wrote some well-regarded UFO books. He claimed to have been a student at MIT He had an MIT shirt. You'd see it in his photos, but he never went there. So for someone who says, hey, this Raymond Shemansky guy says he worked at Wright-Patt, how do we know that?
Well, I have a retirement certificate that says I worked there for 38 years and 9 months. So we've got that going for us. I have a flag that was flown over the Capitol that shows the date I entered and the date I retired. I have a file that's 6 inches thick of all my paperwork so I can prove it. And if your audience wants to prove it to themselves, here is the most direct and simple way. I led a team for a group in the Pentagon. I work for the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering, and I was called an agent of the ADA Joint Program Office. And all that meant is that the program office and all the funding and management was in the Pentagon, and I was here in a laboratory where we could do cool things to help push forward their agenda. If they use my last name, and the spelling will appear certainly on your website, and they type the word in ADA, A-D-A, it will show reports that were unclassified that I wrote for the Air Force, for the Department of Defense, and they can download these from the Defense Technical Information Center called DTIC, and they'll see a handful of these documents that are readily available to the public that I signed off on, and it will show you who I work for and when I work for all of them. So there's actually public documentation out there, easily available.
So I take it you have various clearances then?
Yes, I had job-appropriate clearances, yes.
But did your job ever encroach on investigation of UFOs, UAPs, or anything like that?
No, unfortunately. And if they wanted to hire me back at my retirement grade, I'd happily go back to do that job. But got some interesting jobs, two of the biggest. One I just mentioned, for 10 years, I was an agent of the ADA Joint Program Office, and our job was to ensure that the ADA programming language was successful, and the ADA programming language was going to use to program our real-time embedded weapons system. So it was very critical to our national security. And that's probably one of, I would say, the more noteworthy things that I did. It had to do a lot with computer software. Nothing that I can recall had to do with aliens until I retired. And that's when I just started my own investigation.
Okay, so you had never said anything publicly before then?
I'm sorry, please repeat that, sir.
Okay, so you had never said anything publicly about UFOs until after you were retired?
Yeah, and the way that happened is I retired in September, 30th September 2011. And, you know, I had spent nearly 40 years at Wright-Patterson hearing all the stories. And in your travels, you're at a lot of other bases and locations. And people always ask you, oh, you're from Wright-Patt, and they want to bring up the subject. So you get a lot of, you know, off-base discussion about it. So finally, when I retired, I said, man, I've got finally something interesting to do. And I had started to do some field research back in about 2008, visiting very famous sites, talking to current witnesses, finding new witnesses, and just trying to discover for myself if there was anything to all of this. Yeah, I didn't care. Aliens? Fine. No aliens? Fine, too. So that's when I went out and I started to do the research. Had no idea I was ever going to write a book. But then things just started to come together. And in 2016, I wrote my first UFO book. And then I guess you would say maybe 6 to 12 months after that, that started to get out into the wind. And, you know, people had me on their shows and, you know, doing some public appearances. So I probably, you know, didn't really start talking publicly about UFOs till late 16 or early 17.
Before then, did you have any knowledge of strange things going on at Wright-Patt? Not the rumors, of course, but in reality.
Well, you're going to have to narrow that question. You mean regarding aliens?
Regarding anything strange in terms of UFOs, the presence, whether alien or not.
I had no direct involvement in the study of aliens or anything related to that, and I have never claimed that. So I know it's disappointing to folks who would like me to say, yeah, you know, I was there and I saw the bodies. But the folks who ask that kind of question clearly don't have an understanding of the situation.
Roswell obviously has been discussed since 1979, 1980, 1.5 million times and then some. Of course, we're familiar with books from Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, of course, Kevin D. Randall, who's been on the Paracast a number of times. And we're hearing lots of stories, lots of rumors. Some stuff doesn't hold up very well, like Kevin's book, Roswell in the 21st Century. He tries to put a new look on it. I assume you're familiar, at least in general, with these books and what's been said. What did you learn, and we can make, possibly extend this to a long discussion, what things did you learn about Roswell that maybe we didn't know from all these books?
Yeah, I don't know. They do cover quite a bit in those books, and you know, I like to grab a hold of something and I like to run it to bedrock. So, you know, I like to get the first person witnesses and that sort of thing. And I disagree to a small extent to, you know, part of that. I'm happy that folks like that went out and did the digging and did the research. But I disagree with a couple of things in the book because, you know, I think they're kind of stretchy and, you know, they're third person or fourth person, that sort of thing. So, you know, my confidence isn't super high and everything. I've also found fabrication in the book by Don Schmidt and Carey. In fact, I called them out on it personally, and they have yet to change that in the book. So, you know, I actually, they were quoting people in their Wright-Patterson book, and I have a special affinity for Wright-Pat because I'm the only one of the three who actually worked there, and for the most part, I'm pretty sure neither of them even set foot on the base. So when they fabricate things about the Air Force or a person who would just so happen was my boss, I tend to take exception to that type of deception wherein they have fabricated a story simply to sell a book or to make themselves look more important than they really are.
Hey, we're going to have more with Ray and Gene and Tim. In fact, Ray is going to hang with us for a premium show after the Paracast for Paracast Plus members. And what that means is you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you experience fatigue when you know you should have energy? One reason fatigue can occur is due to a lack of antioxidants in the body. This deficiency happens the older we get, or due to eating an unhealthy diet, or even due to exercise. Your body's number one antioxidant is glutathione. When your cells are depleted of glutathione, you will be fatigued, inflamed, possibly depressed, and may also feel pain. Empirical results indicate that consuming green metal whey protein powder is the most effective means of increasing glutathione production. Green metal whey supplies nature's richest source of the precursor to making glutathione within the trillions of cells of your body. This protein strongly supports the cell's ability to make glutathione. Add to this that green metal whey also supports immunity, energy, lean muscle development, fat loss, and has anti-cancer properties, and you have nature's most complete and strongest superfood. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
USA Radio News.
President Biden is crossing the pond ahead of the state funeral for Queen Elizabeth II. People waiting in line to file past the casket were greeted by King Charles and Prince William, who made an unannounced visit. As expected, the Justice Department has filed their appeal against an order barring it from using documents seized at former President Trump's Florida estate. A Trump-appointed judge denied a similar motion on Thursday. Yeshiva University, an Orthodox Jewish school in New York, abruptly suspended all student club activities after the Supreme Court lifted a hold on an order forcing the school to recognize an LGBTQ student group. Puerto Rico is under a hurricane warning as Fiona heads towards the island. Meanwhile, western Alaska is dealing with remnants of a typhoon expected to bring high winds and flooding to the region. I'm Kenneth Burns, USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, having worked at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, having obviously clearances related to your job, now you're running full bore into the UFO field, the crazy UFO field. Did anybody from Wright-Patt or from the government in general come to you and say, Raymond, what are you doing?
Well, I actually didn't go public with my interest until my first book was published in early, maybe February of 2016. So by that time, I was already out of the base for 5 years. In fact, kind of the opposite happened. Rather than folks, you know, coming out of the woodwork, which really never happened. No, only once, and that was recently, after I published my third book, did somebody come out of the woodwork and put their arm around me and try to give me some, you know, fatherly advice. But for the most part, the opposite happened, that folks that I knew, and they go all the way up in the rank of general in the Air Force and civilian general equivalents, those would be called senior executive service, they were excited by my interest and my knowledge and my connections and actually did things that would help me in my investigations, give me a connection or tell me a story and, you know, give me a lead. So for the most part, you know, these are people that worked in the labs or they had high leadership positions, and, you know, they were in a better, much better position to hear more than I ever did. So maybe without sharing with me, you know, they'd hope maybe I would track down one of their breadcrumbs. So I never really got the blowback. I got a lot of support.
I think it's interesting going back to your first encounter when you started working there at Wright-Patterson. I think you said it was in 1973 that there were people there on the base and in the town of Dayton who were very familiar with the whole idea of Wright-Patterson receiving possible, you know, alien debris or possibly even bodies, when at that time Most people in the United States had no idea about this, and yet that early on, there were people talking to you about it.
Is there a question in there?
More of a lead to that. So I suppose, why do you think that there were people there on the base and in the town of Dayton that were familiar with the concept of the possibility of a crashed UFO out west being brought to Wright-Patterson when the rest of the country was still pretty much in the dark about that?
Right. I think Jesse Marcel Sr. was interviewed by Stanton Friedman in 1978, and that's when that all became public. Quite frankly, I don't know. You know, the guy that gave me the original information and said, you know, there was a crash out west and they brought their stuff here may not have been referring to Roswell. So, you know, that's
probably not. Yeah.
That's a possibility because, again, you know, I put what he said to me or what I remembered or we both remembered in the first book, and it's in stone. And nowhere in there is the word Roswell mentioned. So I can't answer that question. I don't know, you know, where that would have come from. But, you know, you've got to understand there's a big mix going on here. And here is the scenario that we know now is true. The person who told me this, I was first recruited into what was called the Avionics Laboratory, and at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, starting in 1917, was the Materials Directorate or the Materials Laboratory, and they oscillated between nameology, a lab or a directorate, when Congress would go, well, you have too many labs. Okay, we're going to call it all Air Force Research Lab, and all the former labs are now going to become directorates. And it was just a name game. But the fact is that the materials lab was in existence for 30 years before the Roswell material ever came here. And we know for a fact that the Roswell material came here because the guy who handled it, Jesse Marcel Sr., went on record saying it went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And then you had the general who was the chief of staff in 1947 when the Roswell material was flown from Roswell to the 8th Army Air Corps headquarters in Fort Worth. He also signed a legal affidavit that said the material that came from Roswell came here. Part of it went to a location in Washington, D.C., and the rest of the material went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So two people, a provenance, the fact that they handled it and they were in a position to know where it went, both signed legal affidavits saying it went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and it was in the laboratory. So, you know, that little tidbit may have been floating around since 1947, but we know it came to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Could that information have trickled up to guys like Al? Quite possibly. I don't have an answer for you. It's a mystery. It is a mystery to me also. All I know is what Al told me and I wrote about, and he validated that story prior to me putting it into a book.
Okay. The wreckage is taken of a possible spaceship to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Where on that base would that material be found?
In the materials laboratory. Now, where was that lab? I'm not sure what building. I'm sure the base historian would know. In fact, the materials lab or directorate, as it's known now, could have been in multiple buildings because they have different machines or devices. You know, they might have a place they do a smelting and analysis. They may have a place where they do, say, X-ray diffraction analysis. So it may not have been in a singular building, but here's the way I see it. It would have happened. You know, they want to have the material tested. The materials laboratory has been in business for 30 years because it was founded in 1917 at Wright-Patterson. The guys who are holding the material are directing all this, say, okay, we're taking it to the materials laboratory. We're going to have a meeting with their boss and the technical guys, and we're going to ask them some questions. And all we want to know is, what can you tell us about it? Does it look familiar? Whatever test you can run on it, and when you guys are developing aviation materials, run those tests. Just tell us what you can tell us, what you know about this. And then we'll be back in, you know, 3 months, write us a report. We'll swear you to secrecy, and that's where it'll stay. Now, people also don't understand, if you read the history, most of the material was like 3-inch by 3-inch squares. And the largest piece that anyone ever speaks about that we can prove saw it is Jesse Marcel, and he said it was like 2-foot by 3-foot. So most of the material fits in a briefcase, you know, put it on the wrist with some handcuffs, bring it to right pad, have the meeting, hand it off, come back 3 or 4 months later, get 1 or 2 copies of the report, never to be seen again, and the guy's got the information and they move forward with it. And that's where it sits for, you know, 30 years until Jesse Marcel goes public with it. Unless there's some water cooler talk. And again, my guy was in the lab. He was a mid-level engineer, and my guy eventually became a member of the senior executive service. That is the elite. That is the equivalent of a flag officer. So the guy who gave me the info, he wasn't just a run-of-the-mill mid-level engineer. That's not where he stayed. He eventually percolated up through the system and became the equivalent of a flag officer. So mull that about for a bit.
You know, I just wonder about the whole logic of it, why he'd do it, why he'd single you out or anyone out, if he had that level of positioning, or maybe not when you first met him, why he'd do that. We got Raymond and Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. J, Josie. It works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product, has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you watching your retirement savings melt away right in front of your eyes as the economy crumbles? Well, if you have an IRA, 401k, or similar account, I need to tell you about a better way that was revealed by a Wall Street Journal best-selling book. Simply put, you can opt out of the insanity and convert your existing retirement account into the most stable physical asset in history, physical gold and silver. Plus, this conversion might qualify you for an IRS loophole that could save you even more. Today, Advantage Gold is giving away a completely free audiobook version of the national bestseller, Gold is a Better Way. Just text the word better to 48542 to get your copy. That's B-E-T-T-E-R to 48542. By the time you drive home, this simple step may save the future value of your retirement. It's not too late if you're not prepared. You can take action now and claim a free copy. Text the word better to 48542. That's B-E-T-T-E-R to 48542. Message and data rates may apply.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So that's the thing that's been worrying me about this. Why would the guy reach out to you, a brand new hire, and come up with this? But the most important thing is here is that if he had this position and these various positions going forward, he'd know, wouldn't he,
no.
What's going on, the full story,
no.
Most of it.
No. Now, that's the problem with the general public. No matter how many times we say the phrase, need to know, they just ignore that and go, yeah, you worked your right pad, you know everybody. No, there's 25,000 people there. I did not know everybody, and everybody who's in SES doesn't get the keys to the kingdom. You know, most of the U.S. presidents were shut out. The only guy that really knew was George Bush Sr., because he learned his stuff working for the CIA. None of the presidents were read in on this stuff.
How do you know that?
How do I know that? Because they go public and they tell you that. And, you know, I'm trying to believe them. And, yeah, they're politicians, and, yeah, I should take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, Clinton, they didn't tell me. Carter, they didn't tell me. Obama, they didn't tell me. You know, everybody said, they didn't tell me. I asked them. They wouldn't tell me. So the issue is, you need to let it go. How he knew, maybe he took a lucky stab. Maybe somebody made something up and it came true. I have no answer for you. I really don't.
Okay, one of the things that concerns me, and it's based on the book from Kevin Randall, Roswell in the 21st Century, the report of possible dead or dying alien beings in connection with Roswell. He said the people who reported or made that claim of alien beings, he couldn't get consistent information and suspected that at least those particular reports were not accurate. He couldn't put his hand on anything that definitely indicated bodies were found. So you're saying, of course, you're accepting that they were. What's your basis for it?
No, I'm not accepting that they were. In fact, I'm awfully squishy on the whole aliens and right pet thing for a number of reasons. I know for a fact, the world knows for a fact, that whatever was recovered in Roswell, you know, Corona really 70 miles to the northwest, the Roswell materials were brought to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. We know that because the guys that were in that chain, the Marcells and the guy who, unfortunately, the general whose name escapes me right now, who was the chief of staff in 1947 at the 8th Army Air Corps headquarters in Fort Worth, they handled the material. They were managing the transportation of that material, and they signed legal affidavits saying the material went to Wright-Patterson. So we have that, and to me, that's a lock. The alien stuff came out 30 years later, and, you know, it just appeared to me that a lot of people wanted to be part of the story. There is no provenance like we have with the materials for the aliens. And so I've always held out that I'm a little bit skeptical about all of that alien stuff coming the right path. I'm sure about the materials. The bodies, not so sure.
Well, the other possibility is here is that there were no aliens. It was a robotic craft that crashed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will go to my grave saying that metal came to Wright-Patterson, but ask me about aliens, man, that's a different story.
Before we get back to Roswell, which obviously has to consume a large part of any discussion about Wright-Patterson, were there any other crashes you heard about where materials might have been taken there?
No, none with the provenance of the Roswell materials. That said, you know, if you think about it, if you have to have a place that you need to reverse engineer something that crashed and possibly, you know, maybe it's a Russian Sputnik, who knows, but anything that you've gathered up that came from the heavens and you recognize it as not ours and not theirs, Wright-Patterson would have been the number one choice for many, many, many years because they had the expertise in aviation, you know, materials. They understood what was required for that type of a job. They had the technical skills. They had secrecy oaths. They had equipment. They had location. They had labs behind fences. If they didn't have any of that stuff, they had contractual mechanisms that they could obtain it. They just, you know, 30 days, they can write a contract with a professor. Hey, you're the titanium guy. Come on in and look at this stuff. So for the longest time, Wright-Patterson would have been the number one place to bring any of this stuff to try to assess it. So it only seems logical that for years, you know, from 47 to who knows, whenever we start setting up labs of similar quality around the country, Wright-Pat was it.
Would that imply the materials would have been moved from Wright-Patterson over the years?
Well, it doesn't take much to move it. I could have put it in my top pocket and taken it across the country. You know, we're talking materials 2 inches by 3 inches. Yeah, you know, it's possible that maybe at some point the materials directorate contracted out testing of materials. Say some kind of brand new machine came out, I don't know, X-ray diffraction or something super exotic. And let's say that another laboratory within the government or some private concern had one of these things because they're making money using it. The government go, hey, look, I got this little cigarette foil size thing. Can you put it in your machine and give me a elemental analysis of this? I want the whole thing. Give me the whole spectrum. So, yeah, of course it's possible, especially as, you know, these newer, better machines come out that can do a more efficient or a more effective analysis. Most certainly, it could have been moved off the base.
I know that I worked in Dayton through much of the early 80s at Channel 7 television and knew quite a few people there on the base. And those who knew my interest in the subject were always asking me what I knew about what had happened in the past at Wright-Patterson.
Well, so, that's funny.
Yeah, well, it's something like you said before, though. I mean, anything that came in probably came in maybe in the, you know, like the late 1940s, unless there were some then the later crashes that might have brought in. So by the time of the 70s and 80s, I think a lot of the people who may have been in the know were long since gone, and or everything, you know, naturally enough, is compartmentalized to such an extent that all you're left afterwards is scuttlebutt.
I guess, but, you know, then again, even the guys that tested it may not have been read in. It's real simple. You know, they don't know where this stuff comes from. So guy comes in, he's got a briefcase, got a handful of these things, and said, look, I'm going to give you 5 pieces. We think they're from the, you know, the same object, and you're just going to run these tests, and they don't know where it came from. They were never told where it came from. So they're not even read in. So there is no in the know. They're just going to run the same test and write a report, and that's it, you know. And that is how you keep it a secret.
And, of course, you can always have a good cover story that, you know, this is we think this is probably part of a Russian space, you know, satellite that crashed in Canada or something like that.
You could, but there's no obligation to even give them a cover story.
Right.
You come in and go, your boss told me you're going to do this, you do this, and then you don't talk about it, and that's it. That's all he knows. All he knows is he's got a piece of 2-inch by 3-inch silver metal. That's all he knows. Now, he might try to put it together later, when the tests are done, and he finds out that, you know, there's some new element that the machine can't identify, or, you know, it's in such a proportion that we couldn't manufacture it at the time it was being tested. We couldn't make that kind of an alloy, for example.
I think one of the other things that you've mentioned that is always rumored about Wright-Patterson is the tunnels there. And I know that when I was there, at times, people would point out to me, like, well, see that there? That's an air duct to a tunnel. Like, oh, there's tunnels there? Yes, of course. I think you were told the same thing.
Well, I've been in the tunnels, so.
Ooh, okay. There you go.
How can anybody be surprised that Wright-Patterson Air Force Base has 8,000 acres and 600 buildings? I mean, we wouldn't have a tunnel? I mean, come on.
I was going to give a very silly pun to believe that you'd have to have tunnel vision.
That's hilarious.
Give me a break. He's just trying to be nice to the host. Raymond, Gina, and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.